to say, I'm real sorry about my new song about looking for some girl named Amy. You ain't gonna hear it on this station, but I'm sure they'll play my newest song called See You Next Tuesday. Bye, y'all.
Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
A full tank of gasoline, $47. Large coffee and a honey bun, $3. One pack of cigarettes, 23 quadrillion, 148 trillion, 844 billion, 308 million, $184,500.
What?
Spending 2 hours on the phone, disputing the charge, and waiting 24 hours for the bank to correct the error and return your $15 overdraft fee? Priceless.
No! Don't put me on hold again!
There are some mistakes in life that are little. For the really big ones, there's your debit card company.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Bacon-Eaten Fool.
Mr. Bacon-Eaten Fool.
Some say it's just for breakfast. Oh, no, no, no. You know that any time is the right time to fry, microwave, or throw a heaping helping in the oven. Oh, connoisseur of sliced swine.
Cure that hunger with pure pork belly.
That's not bacon. It's bacon on bacon.
And it needs a little more bacon, yeah.
So the next time you crave a porcine plateful of bacon brittle, a bacon-wrapped filet, bacon-covered pizza, chocolate-covered bacon, or a bucket of bacon bits, we'll tip our pork pie hat to you, Mr. Bacon-Eaten Fool, a real American hero.
Mr. Bacon-Eaten Fool.
You don't just eat bacon. You let it melt in your mouth like meaty candy.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday, March 10th. The year is 2010, still. And good morning to you, Kara.
Good morning, Sam. I swear it's not my fault. It's the traffic's fault.
Yeah, it's always the traffic's
fault.
I know. I wasn't going to say anything, but you brought it up.
Well, you know.
So I tend to keep that stuff inside until it blows up.
Oh, that's good. So let's just start leaking it out now so we could
yeah, release some steam, right?
Instead, you know, where there's one day where, you know, you throw me up against the wall. You're like, listen here, Missy.
Yeah. I just have one thing for people that are late, and that is you obviously don't know how to estimate time.
Well,
so what you need to do is give yourself a few extra minutes. And not just you. I mean, everybody that's
right.
late, there's an answer for it.
You know what? Actually, yeah. I'll take ownership of it.
Okay.
The reality
Thank
is...
you.
No, the reality is that sometimes I can get here so quickly, and it's like I'm sitting here waiting.
Yeah.
And then there's sometimes I leave the same time, and traffic is different. And
right.
It, you know, so it's better to just be, you know, on the other side of it where you're just here early.
Mm.
But, you know.
But wait a minute. I mean, you're wearing the same clothes as yesterday?
No. I just have on the same scarf. This is totally different on Sunday.
Oh, I see. Okay. I didn't.
Only the best for you, Sam.
Yeah. It's the same color combination.
Oh, what did I have on yesterday?
A blue dress.
A blue dress? Really?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
With this red. I remember that.
A blue dress with the red. I'm thinking that it's not true, but I'm going to have to go back.
Maybe
and
it's
look.
Not. Maybe it was black. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I try to do my makeup in the car, as usual, very safe driver that I am, running here late and drinking my coffee.
That's why your face is a little red?
It's a little pink, and it's also just I don't have any mascara, so I feel very naked.
Oh, you do?
I don't have any on.
That's okay.
For those of you guys listening, I apologize.
They're still looking beautiful.
Thank you. I don't have any mascara on. And if you're a woman, you know what that means. It's like,
You feel naked?
Yeah, your eyes just feel like they're not awake. You feel like you're like, you don't have any... my eyelashes on. Yeah. It sucks. Why do they take cartoon characters that are females and put, to make her female, you give her like dark
like
lashes.
Big eyelashes.
Yeah,
right?
It's the same thing. So now I feel like a man is what I'm trying to say.
I see. Okay.
I feel like a man. Yeah. But that's okay. I can work through it. I'll get through it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I kicked my former landlord's ass in court yesterday.
Tell us about it. How did
so
it go?
I will tell you about it in a moment. First, when we, I was irritated because we got to the courthouse and, you know, you go through security and everything, and I take out all my stuff, and then the security lady there picks up my lighter. She says, "What's that?" And I said, "It's a lighter." She said, "Well, can you turn it on?" So I turned it on, and it's a torch lighter. So she says, "You can't have torch lighters in here." And I thought, you know, I'm not going to start arguing with him about this. Mm-hmm. So I just had to go outside and throw it out. $25 lighter I had to throw out.
That kind of irritated
me.
That is at the courthouse?
But I should have thought about it before I brought it with me.
Why do you have a torch lighter? Are we talking like a – what does it look like?
It's just like, you know, rather than the soft –
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's good. Like, you know, it works in the wind very well, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't go out.
Could you have hit it in a bush or something?
I guess I could, but
you could.
I mean, it's a public place and people can see you, you know. What am I going to do? Start looking for places to hide things, you know?
It's
they
true.
Would think it's a bomb, you know, at
that
point.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah.
So you had to toss your lighter.
Yeah, so I had to toss my lighter and then... Then we go in there. It's the courthouse here in Van Nuys, okay?
That's always a fun place.
Yeah, so as to be expected, you get to see some trailer trash there and that type of a thing. And literally, I mean, there were a few people there fighting over their trailer home.
Oh, okay, so we're going real on this.
Yeah,
okay.
This is real.
This is real life. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like a stuffed courtroom. It's very small, and there's standing room only. Space there, you know, so people are like standing around and waiting for themselves to be called, and then, you know, they take their time and tell you all the instructions and everything, and after a while I just said, gee, let me just leave, you know, I mean, I don't think, and they tell you that they may not get to your case that afternoon because they have more than they can handle.
Yeah,
so why would they even call you If they know that you may not be able to go up, you know?
I know.
Then you have to come back the following day and all that shit.
It's just so not good time management.
No.
They need to leave earlier for work.
You would think by now they would know how many cases they can handle.
Yeah.
You know, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, in like 3 hours or something.
Yeah.
But that was not the case. So we're sitting there. And then they try to talk you into going to mediation. They had a woman there and she would do it for free. You know,
what
like
does
you
that
can
mean?
Go outside.
You guys could talk about your feelings about how you're both really upset. And then
no,
somebody...
no, not at all. Not at all. There's mediation and there's arbitration, okay? In mediation, let's see. The difference between the two is, well, the similarity is that you have someone that sort of like moderates what's going on, okay? Gets you to talk to each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But this is to sort of come up with a settlement without going to court.
Okay.
So they sort of like have you present your sides and stuff, and then they, in mediation, I don't think they make a decision. In arbitration, the third person gets to make the decision for you.
But what if you don't like the decision? Go to court.
Well, you have to go with it because that's what arbitration is. In mediation, though, they just try to get you to settle and stuff, you know?
Okay.
And if you don't, then you don't, but they don't have the power to decide.
So mediation is the mediator basically acts as like a go-between and helps you guys come to like a resolution.
Right, right. But almost like a judge, but without making
But there's
any
no
judgment.
Enforcement of it.
Right.
Okay, well then arbitration is the same thing, but there is an enforcement.
Exactly.
Then why not just go to court? Like, I don't understand the difference between arbitration and court then.
Because in court you might lose. You might
lose in arbitration, right?
Yeah, but it may not be the way that you want. You know, I mean, in mediation you can decide whether you go with it or not, you know, if
but
you don't
in arbitration,
like
you don't have a choice.
Right, but they only had mediation there, so so that's
okay.
Just. And I hope I'm right. I hope I'm not confusing the two, but I'm pretty sure those are the ones. But at any rate, so I thought, well, maybe we'll go out for mediation. So we go outside, and that woman is totally busy with a few other people, and I thought, the hell with this, you know, let's just go back in. And luckily, they called our names. And, you know, this is following, like, people that, you know, they have cases that shouldn't take more than 5 minutes, but they can't speak English, and they bring an interpreter, and this whole thing. And then what's even worse is when someone comes in and can't speak English, and they don't have an interpreter, you know, and they just come in there, and they try to present the case. And the judge told them, you know, go and come back when you can present your case.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, I mean, what's the point? And you go in there, you don't understand what the judge is saying. You don't understand what anybody is saying. You know, so, yeah, so they finally called us. And, mm-hmm. Oh, so by the way, so let me tell you the background story.
On this. Yeah, I didn't get, all the, yeah, I didn't get okay. all the juice.
No, nobody did, actually. But this thing started, this is about the offices, the studios we had before we moved here.
Mm.
So it's like a few months ago.
Oh, so it has to do with your business.
Yeah, it's a business thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, we were there for a while. We had a son of a bitch landlord, you know, as they usually are. But someone who would not respond to our requests and stuff. We were there in the summer in 100-degree weather, and we told him the air conditioning is not working. He would come there, and he says, it's working. You know, what are you going to do with someone like that? You know?
They blatantly...
Yeah, he just stands there and says, it's working. You know? So, and that's 100-degree weather. I mean, we had people come in, and you can see in the studio, it's pretty small. When you close the door, it can become like a sauna in here. You know, mm-hmm. And especially there, we had a lot of windows with the sun beating on the windows, on the glass and stuff, and it was getting really hot. So it was like you couldn't even work there. You couldn't even sit there for a few minutes. And it went on for months, and the motherfucker wouldn't fix it, you know. And we started threatening him, you know, by, you know, we'll get our own person and we'll get it fixed, and then we'll send you the bill, or we'll take you to court and all this shit. So... what he did is, after a while, he realized, you know, he's not going to shut us up. So he turned around and found a little loophole in the lease, okay? In other words, he had wanted us to bring liability insurance, like as part of the lease. But we couldn't find any because we were a radio station, and many companies were just worried because they don't understand the difference between internet radio station and terrestrial radio station. So they're thinking of these big stations with towers where people climb and shit and they can injure themselves.
Yeah, no, this
and all
like...
that. So nobody wanted to insure us.
Yeah.
So, you know, so he sued us for that and wanted to evict us. So in the meantime, we were able to find insurance with an out-of-state company. But he insisted still that he wanted to get rid of us. So, you know, for violating the lease and stuff. So, you know, but never mind the fact that we already got it. You know, so as far as he's concerned, if he's a good businessman, he'd figure, look, now I'm covered. My ass is covered. You know, it's not really this. And I'll let them stay because it's not a great real estate market right now. You know,
yeah.
You drive down the boulevard here and there's so many, many vacancies and for lease that, you know, it's not a smart thing to kick out your tenants.
No, no.
But that's exactly what he did. So we had to go to court with him because he wanted to kick us out of there and we didn't want to leave. So we needed attorneys for that shit. Now, he never showed up because he's a coward. So he sent...
He didn't show up yesterday.
No, no. I mean the first trial.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We had a trial with lawyers and shit
mm-hmm.
to evict us. That's not small claims. You know, that's like a big deal. But our concern was that if he evicts us... And then he'll probably still want the rest of the money for the rest of the lease, even if we're not there, because he's entitled to it. You see?
Really?
Yeah, because he can claim that we broke the lease by not bringing the insurance.
So this is a major douche.
That's a major douchebag.
Wow.
So he served me with papers, and we went to court, and he didn't show up. He sent his attorney. Because he's a coward. He, you know, I mean, he got to a point where he wouldn't even talk to me or anything. He was just like mad at me like a little kid, right? Now, I don't know why, but that's the point. So he just can't deal with these things, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we did is, in that case, we settled. Because, you know, our attorney told us, you know, I mean, he could hold you liable for the rest of the money, for the rest of the lease, even though you won't be there and all this shit. And I thought, my God, you know, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars here. So we were able to settle with his attorney that we would leave and the eviction notice would be sealed, like it wouldn't go on a record or anything.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So we agreed to that. You know, we figured, shit, we don't have to pay the rest of the money. We'll just leave. Fuck him, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we did. So we found this place. Now, in the meantime, we have not received our deposit back, our security deposit back from him, right?
Which I'm sure is hefty.
It is. A few thousand dollars.
Yeah.
And didn't hear from him. Now, by the law, after 3 weeks, he needs to refund it to you or send you some kind of notice that he had to make repairs or whatever, and he deducted that from your deposit and all that shit. We received nothing. Nothing. You know what? We sat back 3 months. I wanted to see how long he's going to take. Never heard from him. Finally, I decided I'm going to send him a letter. I sent him a letter in November, and he sends me a letter back, says, yeah, I got your letter, and this is the second letter I'm sending you, and showing you that we actually had to repair the place, and it costs more than your deposit. And he sends me some kind of cockamamie proposal without itemization or anything. It just says, like, you know, the amount.
Yeah.
So, in other words, he figured, yeah, I'll deduct the whole fucking amount from your deposit and fuck you type of a thing.
Yeah.
That's his attitude. And I said, well, let's see about that. So I filed for small claims and took him to court for that deposit.
Mm.
So we get to the court, and of course he's not there, and he sent someone, right? He sent someone, supposedly his property manager or something, some fucking idiot. And he brings us some papers. He's like, here's the papers we're going to present and stuff, you know, like discovery type of a thing. And we're going to show that we have a copy of the check that we paid the contractors to fix, blah, blah, blah. We had taken pictures of the place when we left, and it was immaculate. It was spotless when we left.
You guys are a radio, or internet radio show. I mean, you're not going around beating shit up. This isn't a wear and tear kind of business.
No. But, I mean, you know, we do have a lot of people coming in and out, okay? But the thing is, he started listing there, like, damage to the wooden floors and holes in the walls and shit. And we had pictures of everything, and everything's immaculate. So, just like here, I mean, you know, you can see I'm a very organized, clean, neat type of a person, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if the wall gets a scratch on it, I clean it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we get there and stuff. Finally, they call our names, and we go there, and the judge starts, you know, with this whole thing. They always show you, those judges will also always show you what you're doing wrong. Oh, you didn't bring this, you didn't bring that. So finally she got, you know, she got it for me that I sent him the letter. He sent it back. And now it was her turn to talk to the other guy. And she asked him, you know, blah, 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 blah. This guy doesn't know shit from a hole in the wall because he hasn't been involved in this, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Just the landlord sent him. So he doesn't know what the hell's going on. But she goes to him. The judge says to him, you've been in this business for a while, right? He says, right. She says, how many years have you been in real estate, in commercial real estate? He says, 20 years. She says, do you know how long after you're supposed to refund the deposit? And he said, yeah. She says, you know, it's longer than residential and stuff, right? He says, yeah. So she says, now let's see. They moved out August. Now, September, October, November, and December is when you finally sent the letter after Sam sent you a letter. Right? Is this getting complicated here?
No, I'm with you.
All right. So she realized that the motherfucker was just stalling and he never, like, tried to contact us or anything.
Yeah.
At that point, she didn't care about damage. She didn't care about anything. All she did was,
'cause they violated.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We'll send you the judgment in the mail. And they do that with everyone. They don't tell you right there, right? But that was it. I asked her, do you want to look at the pictures? No, I don't even care. You know, it's not like she didn't even get into the proposal and how much money.
So
and
smart,
all that
though,
stuff.
Because if they had a legitimate claim, they would have taken care of it right away.
Yeah, and sent us a letter saying, yeah, one thing or another, by the law, in 3 weeks, you have to do something.
And they violated.
Yeah. I mean, they held our money for 4 months. So, you know, so I felt great about this, you know, and you know how you plan for weeks what you're going to say to the judge and what they're going to say and all this shit. And the bottom line is those judges are not stupid, you know.
No.
They sit there all day. Everybody tries to give them everything in the book, every story in the book. But they know what to ask for. They know what to look for.
Yeah.
You know? And in 2 minutes, she sorted it out. You know?
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so we left there feeling really, really good, you know, because obviously we won this case, you know.
So, so you won this case. What does that mean? You're getting a check in the mail?
I better, or otherwise we can put liens on his property and shit like that.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
okay.
If he gets a court order, he has to pay it.
What is with it, Sam? In this town, now, you know, most of my adult life I've been here. I wasn't in Texas. I moved like right out of high school, but. Owners of real estate, property managers, apartments, the whole nine yards, they're crooks.
Yeah.
They're crooks. I mean, I moved here with a couple of roommates, and they decided they needed to do some repairs in our bathroom. We didn't even ask for it, but apparently they needed to do some repairs.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in people that didn't know what the hell they were doing and used tar. I don't know if you're familiar with what tar does. It basically is this huge black cloud of muck.
Right,
and
right.
It, our whole apartment,
uh-huh.
I literally couldn't see my hand in front of my face.
Wow.
All my clothes, I had to get them dry cleaned. We had to actually unplug our fridge and stuff, so we lost all the groceries in our refrigerator. And I kept trying to call the landlords and be like, look, we need another apartment until you guys fix this and it's cleaned out and everything's cleaned. I said, it's uninhabitable right now.
Right.
They wouldn't return our calls. They told us to go get a hotel and they'd reimburse us. And I was like, oh, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had to fight so hard just to get a clean place to take a shower.
Right.
But anyway, my long story short, I mean, it was like fighting for... It was just like, this is bare essentials, and, you know, they're just crooks.
Yeah, I know. Let's take a phone call real
sure.
quick. We got to call our author in a moment, too. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, how are you?
Hello.
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing well, too. Where are you calling?
I'm calling from New York.
Okay. New and you calling the radio station?
Yes.
Okay. What can you help? What can we help you with?
What's your name?
My name is Michael.
Hi, Michael. What's going on?
The nice weather, worshiping God.
Oh, good.
Sounds good. Do you know Michael by any chance?
No, I don't.
No, we don't know Michael in New
Michael,
York.
Michael, do we know each other?
Okay, I've had enough of this guy. All right.
Did you hang up on him?
Anyway, sort of. We hung up at the same time.
You know, you never know the people that are going to call.
No, you can tell right away that he's going to
waste
their time.
Like, he doesn't have much going on. Yeah,
no, not much going on.
No.
Okay, we're going to call. Oh, you know what? We have 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to call too early.
Cool.
But we are going to talk to someone about romance rehab.
I know.
Okay?
I saw this.
Yes, 10 steps to rescue your relationship, my dear.
Got to get one first rescue. Woo!
There you go. But
yeah.
I figured this is probably good for you because
Thanks.
You're more into relationships than just sex. No,
yes.
I meant it that way. You're into
romance. Yeah, no, you're right.
Stuff,
you're right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's not as much for me as it is for you.
Yeah, and you're the one with the relationship. That's funny. You're the one with the relationship, Sam. Are you good to her? Do you do fun stuff for your wife?
Actually, on Valentine's Day, I did this
what
year
did
for
do?
A change.
What'd you do?
Well, I got us some roses and a card, and we went out to... I think I told you. We went out to that breakfast on Sunset
Boulevard. Yeah.
Yeah. So this year, yeah, I did, I was being nice. But you know what? To be fair, I don't do enough, you know?
Really?
I mean, it's really easy to just go and get flowers out of the blue one day and just bring them. You know, women like that. But the problem is I don't even think about it. You know, if it occurred to me, I would do it, but it doesn't occur to me. So I don't know if that makes me a bad husband or just a forgetful one. But,
well, I mean, you know, everybody, whether you're a woman or man, there's maintenance that's involved, and women don't think of stuff. Like, I think men have different needs than women do, and it's like women needing to be in tune to what those needs are and making a conscious effort to do it. We're just programmed differently.
Yeah.
Like women, you know, it boils down to, have you ever read The Five Love Languages?
No.
Okay, well, love language is how you give and receive love. You have mm-hmm. a primary and a secondary one.
Mm-hmm.
But the five love languages are touch, physical touch,
mm-hmm.
Words of affirmation, like you want to be told, you want to hear, thank you so much, I love it when you this, da-da-da-da-da, like praise,
right.
You know? The other one is quality time. You just want to do, it doesn't matter if you're doing nothing, you just want to do it with that person, like you want to be with them doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
The other one is acts of service. Some mm-hmm. people may never say I love you and stuff, but they'll... do your shopping, do your taxes, fix your car, things like that.
Right.
It's like they're servicing you, and that's their way of showing you that they love you.
Mm.
And then the other one is gift giving. Like some people like giving gifts as part of their love language.
Right.
And so a lot of times people just have different ways that they give and they express and they receive love. For example, growing up for me, we really didn't get a lot of gifts. So I remember being like young. I was in a little baby relationship, like right out of high school. And the guy started getting me gifts for like certain months of anniversaries, because that's what you do when you're a kid. You you celebrate every month, like, oh, we made it to 1 month. Woohoo! Here's And I just wasn't doing that. I just didn't. I didn't even occur to me to get him a gift. I just was like, it just wasn't in my vocabulary. And he was really offended. He felt like I didn't care about him and stuff. And I was like, oh, I mean, now as an adult, I can see. Well, first of all, it's immature. But second of all, I could see that that's the way he expresses and has, you know, maybe the way he grew up too was getting gifts.
Right.
Whereas for me, I've been in relationships with guys where, not very long, where one guy just wasn't much of a toucher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, non-sexually, like, just, you know, touching, massaging.
He didn't like the touch and stuff?
He wasn't a toucher.
Really?
And I'm, like, a super cuddler. I mean, I touch all my girlfriends. I'm, like, snuggling and I'm smacking them around, pinching them.
I bet you do, goddammit.
I love physical touch.
Yeah.
I think it's really important and healthy, actually. And a lot of people aren't touched.
I agree. I'm a toucher, too.
I think that a lot of people aren't touched enough. And I don't mean sexually. I mean, like, just, you know, grabbing their arm or, you know, resting on them. It just builds trust and it's bonding and loving.
Right.
But no, he was like, one time I think I was like lounging on him or like always touching him. And he was like, I can't handle it. He's like, it's sensus overload. It's too much. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this isn't going to go anywhere. I really knew. I was like, oh, this is not going to work. But no, touching, I like to, you know, words of affirmation. I like to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be told. I like to I like that kind of communication. Yeah. But, you know, some people just don't, you know, communicate like that. They'd rather, like, I have a friend where I think her husband's a little bit more like acts of service. He's always, you know,
does things for her.
He does a lot of stuff for her. A lot of mechanical things. He also does a lot of domestic stuff. He does so much stuff where it's just like his.
See, I don't do much. So I do need to bring flowers every now and then.
Yeah, but that means women, everybody's geared differently, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Everybody is geared differently and wired differently and everything else.
Yeah.
So let's call Dr. Jan Hoisted. And the book is Romance Rehab.
Hello, this is Dr. Jan Hoisted.
Good morning, Jan. How are you today?
Good morning.
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This is Sam and Kara calling you from Los Angeles.
And, good morning.
I'm willing to bet that it's pretty cold where you are right now.
Well, actually, we have a little light rain, and the snow is melting, and it's in the 30s and 40s, so we think it's a balmy spring on its way.
Right, and I'm guessing you're in Minnesota, right?
I'm in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, that's right. You see, I do my research, let me tell you.
Well, good, and I've done mine, too. I have your faces right up here in front of me.
Wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
So
I know who I'm talking to.
There you go. You see the age of the Internet now.
That's right.
So you wrote the book Romance Rehab, 10 Steps to Rescue Your Relationship. Give us a little background on yourself. You're a doctor. What is it that you do in your regular time when you don't write books?
When I don't write books, I am in my work life. I write and I see clients for relationship coaching, for therapy. I do long distance work on the telephone with clients, sometimes all over the world. Everybody who's trying to have a better relationship, I will work with them.
Right. And how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this for 30 years.
Wow. Well qualified in my book, let me
tell
you.
There you go, 30 years at anything.
Yeah.
Expert. You know a lot more.
I started in my youth, of course.
Yeah. So, Romance Rehab, I like the title, you know, because I think it says it all. It says, let's fix what's not working. And so tell us a little bit about the book itself. How is the book structured and what does it offer the readers?
Well, it starts out by giving readers a number of exercises where they can look at the style of relationship that they are either having or want to have. And there are four different styles that I offer them. I ask them to take a look at what they really want. And then the book, the rest of the book is really about how to create what I call a big picture partnership. It's a way of working in sync with one another, of staying really connected, of working out any differences that might come up, and it's the basis for how to stay together, how to have a vibrant relationship for the long haul.
Right. Now, would you say these days there's more problems with relationships that used to be in the past, or is it just more coming out in the open now?
Well, I think the problems are probably different. I think we've gone through a period of about 30 years where people were, you know, they've been having all different styles of relationship, where in the past people had a very similar style of relationship, more of a traditional style. And now people are trying to figure out, well, why are you on one page and I'm on another page? We also have the economy. We have all the life stressors. People are pretty stressed out these days. And so sometimes their relationship, even though they would like it to be a priority, it ends up going on the back burner.
Right. What in your experience, what do you find are some of the main problems that couples have in relationships?
Well, I would say one of the top things that I find is that couples forget to prioritize their relationship, mm-hmm. especially couples that have two careers, two busy jobs, and they have kids. They put all of their attention to those things first, right. when they really should be maintaining their connection first, mm-hmm. and then out of that they can really support one another in how do we handle the kids, what do we do about money, okay, you're trying to work your way through your career, I've got some stressors at my job, and once they make their relationship a priority, then I teach them how to put all those other issues on what I call a metaphorical partnering table so that they can look at them together rather than blaming one another or putting them between them where they become problematic.
Right. You see, and that's why I think a book like this helps, because we're not really given instructions on how to behave in a relationship, you know, in a romantic relationship.
That's right. That's right. And I think of this like, you know, we all get our degrees in our careers and we work really hard to become excellent at that. And I think of this like we need to get our PhD in relationships so that we can feel successful at it. You know, almost 90% of our adult population gets married at least once in their lifetime. Mm. And that says people are driven to connect with one another, and people really do want to become excellent at what they do. They want to be proud of themselves. And so I really encourage people, get your training in how to have the basics of good relationship, and then you can feel good as you go forward together.
Right. Right. Now, what do you say, you know, to some couples? I think this is probably, you know, something that happens quite a bit. And that is, you know, couples that have been married for a few years and sort of like, you know, the sexual attraction, or maybe even the sexual attraction is still there, but the sexual activity is diminishing and so forth. What are some of the things that, you know, people can do to really light the fire again?
Well, one of the things that I find with couples is I help them look at whether or not they're interacting with one another as true adults. So I have some exercises and ways of talking to them about, have they slipped into more parental kind of roles with one another or childlike roles with one another?
Yeah.
Because when they do that, they are going to lose the chemistry.
That is so, true. That is so true, Jan. I went through that.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. What did you experience with that?
Well, I had was in a long relationship, and we both had a lot of unmet needs in our childhood that eventually just came out in our relationship. And so he started to kind of father me, and I would kind of mother him. And it was, in some ways, that the childhood needs were getting met, but the adult in us was not satisfied. So I started to lose sexual attraction and mm-hmm. started to become, although totally in love with the guy, it was just like I couldn't really go there sexually because there was a mothering quality that was there.
That's right.
And I was like, I just don't want to have sex with somebody that I feel like I'm parenting. And it started to turn me off,
yeah.
major. And I didn't
That's
realize
right.
it at the time until I grew up and was like, oh, don't do that again.
Right. So a lot of the work that I do with couples initially as they're starting to partner is to have them understand what states they're in and are they really interacting with each other from an adult place. Because we feel really good about, you know, when we're moving in the world as adults, we almost always do it when I say to people, well, how do you treat your friends and your colleagues? Oh, I know how to be an adult. For some reason, when we get together in a long-term intimate relationship, we feel like we can let our hair down and show the other person everything and they're supposed to love us for all these right. parts of ourselves when really we need to be parenting ourselves. We need to be supportive of that. But then we need to stay in an adult place so we can kind of go toe-to-toe because it creates that little bit of zest and zing and then learning how to work through difficulties. But it brings back the vibrancy. And
I
that's
see.
One thing that brings the sexual attraction back.
Right. So you're saying we get pretty much preoccupied with different things. I would also imagine, you know, if you're like fighting all the time, you're not really in the mood for sex with that person, you know? It's not...
That's right.
You're not even on the same side, you know?
Right. Especially women, they want to feel... You know, oftentimes men can put aside the fight and they're willing to connect sexually. I don't want to overstate one gender or another, but that's a little bit more common. And women will say, well, you're not connecting with me emotionally. I need that before. And what I try to encourage both of the genders to do is come towards one another. You need to come partway towards one another. You need to learn how to resolve some of your issues, but you can't always wait until they're fully resolved, you know?
Right.
Otherwise, we might never have fun together, or we might stop having sex totally. So there is a way where we have to realize that some of the issues between us are going to be dealt with over the long term. You know, they're going to take a little time. They're going to stay on the table. We're going to bring them back up. We're going to talk about them on a regular basis, but we have to keep the positives going and flowing between us. And so, you know, sexuality is part of that. And
yeah.
a lot of the psychologists these days are saying sometimes couples just need to, you know, we need to have sex. You know, set aside Saturday mornings or Wednesday night or whatever it is and get back into it as a way of, reconnecting. I encourage couples to, if they haven't been having sex and if they've been fighting a lot, I ask them to do two things. First, stop fighting for now while you learn a new way of communicating. And the other thing is to cuddle in the morning and the evening for 5 minutes.
Mm.
You know, there's no obligation to have sex. It's just cuddling, just,
right.
you know, physical connection and being kind to one another. Maybe it's a time when they talk about appreciations or just hold one another. And oftentimes that will warm up the atmosphere between them.
Yeah, that's true. I know that from experience.
I guess I'm just way out of the loop, Jan, but I'm sitting here going, these people have an all-access card to having sex, and they have to schedule sex. And I know that that's a realistic thing for a lot of people. I just don't connect because I'm like, if you're married and you love that person, you guys have to really schedule sex. You sleep in the same bed. And it should be fun.
Well, often,
it should be fun, right?
Yeah, but you're busy all the time.
Oftentimes they're so tired, you know?
Oh, okay.
They're so tired.
Fall asleep doing sex, though. Get your sex on and take, you know, like, knock it out. You can do a quickie.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I hope they're listening to you, and maybe they'll take your advice.
Sex is so much fun. I have a really really close friends that are married, and, I'm, like, the fun, like, single, like, you know, on the other side, the grass is greener, right? So I'm like, you mean you're not having sex? Like, figure it out. 2 o'clock in the morning, wake up and do it, and then go back to bed. I mean,
obviously, she's not been in a long term relationship.
I have been in a long term relationship.
Yeah.
Kara, I think you've got great advice. It's whether or not they're in sync at the same time.
You're so right, Jan. I know I'm coming from the I'm trying to wait till I'm married again to have sex. So I'm on the different end where I'm like, okay,
you're ready for it. That's
yeah,
right.
But I just think it's so fun. I'm like, why wouldn't you really? Like, even if you're pissed, you can have, like, you know, happy, you know, like, not angry sex, but kind of that passion that you're angry towards
you
each other.
You can have passionate makeup sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, you're so idealistic because
I
you
know
don't know what's involved.
I know I am. Everything has, it's never that easy. I realize
yeah.
that. But it's just, it's, I hear you guys talking about it, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Well, no. You're right, Kara. There are actually people who are saying, you know, sometimes you just have to get back in the swing of it if you haven't been having a lot of sex. And you'd be surprised at how many people aren't having much sex.
You're so right.
They would all say, you know, it's because we're just so busy and we don't have time for one another. They barely have time for a date these days.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what I encourage them to do. Let's prioritize your relationship again. And oftentimes they want the emotional connection
first. You're right.
You know, so they want to know they're appreciated by their partner. They want to know that their partner's, you know, got their back and that they're going to take out the garbage without being asked. And, you know, and sex is the first thing to go when people are having difficulties. It's also the last thing to come back, I hate to say.
That's so true.
Because people use it in so many different ways.
As a weapon.
Sometimes as a weapon. And
punishment.
Manipulation and everything, you know.
That's so interesting, Jan.
Yeah. Jan, I did want to ask you about what did I want to... It's always like this. So I forget what I wanted to
ask. She's a wealth of knowledge. Get those questions in.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't go anywhere, Jan. You know?
I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
No, I remember now. What happens if just one side is interested in working on things and the other isn't? Like, let's say the wife she gets romance rehab and she, you know, utilizes all the tools and everything, and the husband is just like, no, I'm not interested in that. What happens at that point?
Well, you know, that is not an uncommon situation where one person will say, oh, you know, it should just work. You know, we shouldn't have to get help for this. We shouldn't have to read a book for this. I encourage the one person who's interested to start anyway, because the whole system, the whole marital system or couple system is going to change if one person starts to change their behavior.
Right.
If one person really starts to understand what it means to treat the other person as an adult and to stay really adult, to not pick fights, to befriend them, to do more positives, and to present things in a way that the other person can hear. Very often what I find is that the other person will come along at least to a certain extent, and then oftentimes they will participate in some kind of coaching themselves, or they might pick up the book, or they'll say, well, tell me about that chapter you're reading about this. And I have couples, when they get in trouble, then they'll go back to that chapter that they're, you know, having difficulty with.
Right.
So sometimes couples one person will read to the other person. If you've got a relationship where one person absolutely will not participate, then you've really got trouble.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's when, you know, the individual who wants change probably needs some coaching or some therapy to take a look at, you know, what's going on here? Have I done everything that I can do? Is there any other way that I can work with my partner on this or my mate on this? And if not, then they're in trouble.
Right, right. Mm. Yes. Because it has to work both ways. I mean, obviously, it involves two people, and both of them have to be into it. You know, if one is not, then there's nothing you can do. You know, you can't put something in the heart that's not there.
That's true.
Know?
But wouldn't you say, though, that, I mean, this isn't like a formula, but that change inspires change. And so if one person is to be proactive in just taking care of their side of things and really putting the work in on their side, that mm-hmm. it could inspire and soften the other person's heart. Potentially they would kind of get on board without you even having to coach them, but because of the fact that they've seen you, you know, maybe you're handling the issues differently. Maybe they're seeing, like you said, becoming more of an adult in those things. It's just like working out. Like I've heard couples like wanting to kind of ridicule the other one to get in shape, but it's like, well, if you just start eating right and you just start working out and you feel good about yourself and you look good, it's almost like the other person starts to feel maybe inspired.
Yeah. That's
they
true.
Feel inspired. They might also feel treated well. You know, it's like when couples aren't getting along, it's usually a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And so if the one person, even though they may not be overly loving initially, but the person who wants to change their own behavior starts really behaving in a basic friendship way and treating the other person respectfully, bringing up issues with a soft start, those kinds of things, you know, the other person almost can't help but respond differently. It doesn't mean that it's going to save a marriage or it's going to fix everything, but oftentimes, even if the other person is unconscious about what's going on, they will start to soften. They will start to interact differently in return. It's, you know, it's about reciprocity. It's like if we feel welcomed, oftentimes we welcome back.
That's so true.
Definitely. And, you know, reciprocating is what it's about, I think. You know, in a relationship, you have to go outside yourself, you know, and
that's
be able
right.
to be compassionate to other people as well.
Well, Scott Peck talks about it as being, you know, love is a discipline. You know, we'd love it to be all hearts and flowers, but it's, you know, for a long-term relationship, it's really a discipline, and it's, do I care enough here? Am I willing to put myself forward?
Right, exactly. And we'll come back to Kara after she has a long-term relationship, and we'll revisit.
I'd love to.
We'll revisit.
Jan, I've been in a long relationship.
Yeah, less than a year.
I was in a 5-year relationship, but 4 of those years, okay. 4 of those years were long distance.
Okay. So
Kara,
I'll take
Kara,
it.
Kara, read the book.
But, oh, I yeah, am.
Exactly.
I'm on it.
And we will talk.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk again when you start getting into a relationship with somebody that you really think is important.
Right.
Because this book is great for people who are starting out.
Oh, okay. No,
wonderful.
I definitely will. Thank you.
Wonderful. And you have a lot of tools and exercises and goal setting and everything in the book. So I think you definitely took this seriously, and I would definitely recommend this. I'm actually going to read it myself. You know, I could use some help.
Do a little tweaking.
Yeah, everybody could use some help,
brush
I think. Yeah.
And well, I always think of this as, these are the 10 things that you can do. It's not rocket science. But if you don't, you know, there's many things you can do to make your relationship better. But if you don't have a lot of time, these are the real basics. These are the kernels, the basic things that you need to do that will keep you connected and feeling good about one another.
Sounds good. We're talking to Dr. Jan Hoystad, and the book is Romance Rehab, 10 Steps to Rescue Your Relationship. Do you have a website to go with the book?
I do. It's drjanhoystad.com. DrJanHoystad.com.
Sounds good. And the book is available everywhere, I know that. And
that's right.
Jan, thank you. All the best to you. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks, Jan.
And everybody go out and get it. And thanks for all the advice. It was really enjoyable talking to you this
morning.
Thanks,
Jan.
Wonderful to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, well, there you go. Romance.
I'd like a million questions for her.
Yeah?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. We could have talked to her about
something. I love that. I like her attitude.
Yeah,
she's
nice.
She sounds like a cool girl.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to be when you work with people, I think.
I always want to go into their personal life,
mm-hmm.
and I really was about to go there, but we were getting off. But I really wanted to ask her, like, you know, because she's the doctor, and I'm sure she's in a relationship, and I want to know how that's working out. And
yeah. That's okay. In the future, just interject, you know?
I'm going to be like, wait a minute,
yeah,
Jan!
Yeah, exactly, Sam. Wait just a minute, you know?
Wait a minute, Jan! I want to know! How's your sex life going, and how is the relationship?
Yeah, don't put her on the spot.
I would ask her those questions.
Yeah. So did you learn something from all this?
I think what she said that I liked was the whole adult part, because I have experienced that where you kind of get into role-playing with the person, and I've seen it in other people's relationships where somebody has more of a power over the other person, and it's not equality.
Right.
And the thing is we're really not attracted to that. We're attracted to equality. Like, when you're out, and let's say you're single, or even as a man today, and, you know, you're still red-blooded man,
mm-hmm.
and you meet somebody that challenges you, not to dominate, but challenges you as your equal, and that there's something inspiring about that. There's something like, oh, they're on top of it, or they're
yeah.
And I'm
depends,
not,
but that's if you're secure about yourself, you know?
Well,
and I
guess
think if not, you're going to find it as threatening to you.
Well,
you know?
What I mean is, when you first meet your spouse or whoever you're with, there's something about them that you're not their father and they're not your mother. You guys are just equals, and there's something about that that's inspiring and exciting.
Yeah.
And I think what can happen when people are in a relationship is they slip into role playing with each other, where mm-hmm. somebody's a little kid and I'll take care of me, and they're the adult in them is not coming out, and they're not being stimulated on that equal level.
Right.
And I think that she really touched on that, and I think that I've experienced that, like I said, so I think it's really valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? That I should start doing the laundry?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean
she does everything for me, you know. So I don't know what role that is.
No, I mean, I think I don't know y'all's relationship at all, but I mean, she sounds like she's a wonderful woman and that you really do appreciate her. It sounds like you do.
No, I do. I do. I just need to do more. But, you know, I mean, I think everybody needs to work on the relationships. Because, like I said, you know, nobody teaches us how, you know. We just sort of, like, fall into it. And, you know, that maybe that's something that you teach in high school. You know, to kids and stuff. You know, like, there's a lot of things, like how to manage money. They don't teach them that at school. You know, relationships, things like
that. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, those are, like, real life skills, right? That it's kind of
right, and I think they should teach you that in school.
I think, well, I think that, I think it would be beneficial on some levels, but I think kind of parents should step up and teach, you know, because everybody's got different styles. And
yeah, but the parents are probably fucked up, too.
Yeah, well, that's how it goes. Yeah. Well, then you have the government raising your kids, and I don't agree with that either.
Yeah,
they teach them weird crap. No, I mean, I think ultimately relationships are about being selfless. Mm-hmm. And if you always put that person first and they put you first, then you're both being satisfied. But, you know, as our nature is selfish, not selfless. Right. So it's like you said, it's something we have to learn. We have to grow. We have to stretch to getting to, you know how to basically sacrifice our needs for that person's needs and just trust that they'll be satisfied later.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Woo! All right. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio Channel 1. Call in 923-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
trash rock. Let's get back. Let's get to Sam and Kara in the morning. Kara in the morning. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, you can see what Greg is concerned with. The Euro trash music.
That's funny. He's funny, that barbecue dude.
Yeah.
I like it. He's like, Sam and Kara in the morning. Totally going to rip off your face.
We should start talking like that, you know?
Yeah, we
Isn't that
Sam
how they talk
Kara.
On radio?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I want to send a shout out to a friend of mine. He Facebooked me yesterday and said, make sure to let your listeners know that you have a global audience, because he's all the way in Australia.
Very nice.
Yeah, and he is an amazing guy. Actually, he friended me a little while back on Facebook, and I accepted his friend request. And then the next day, I got like 25 friend requests, and I thought, oh shit, this guy's nuts. And they were all like different people that I didn't know any of them, but he was the only mutual friend.
Right.
And I was like, oh man, he's trying to. There's some bug I got in my computer. There's a virus, and I sent him. I said, hey, thanks for the friendship, but you know what's going on here? He's like, no, I'm just, you know, I sent him people that I think would really be a fan of yours and think you're awesome. And I was like, oh okay.
That's cool.
Well, it turns out he really is just a really cool guy that, you know, he's always promoting somebody that's a musician or somebody that is got something cool going on. And he's kind of like a social activist in Australia, and he really works with a lot of the community and the homeless population and really is an advocate of animals. And anyway, his name is Kevin St. Alder, and you can find him on my Facebook page. But he's a really cool guy, and I just want to send a shout-out to Kevin St. Alder. Hope you're doing good, okay, and all the way in Australia, okay? See ya. I love me some Kevin, okay?
Where in Australia does he live, do you know?
I don't know exactly where he lives. Okay. We we'll haven't done all that. But I think he lives in, I don't know, I think he lives, it's all cool, right? Isn't all Australia pretty cool?
Yeah, it is cool.
Unless you're stuck in the desert without water, but yeah.
Yeah, no, Australia is pretty beautiful. I mean,
have
I'd
you ever
love
been?
To go. No, no,
I'd love
to
go.
Know, yeah.
I have a lot of friends from Australia because they're like world travelers. They just travel. They're the best travelers. And I've had two Australian roommates and a lot of Australian friends, and they're just so great. They're just so much fun, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend, and her name was Phoebe, and she's like a little princess, and she's so cute. And like one day she came in and she had just bought some new boots from the store, and she had just gotten a bikini wax, and she came outside on the porch, we had like a balcony, and she's literally just wearing her underwear and her new boots.
Oh.
And she's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
And she's talking to me, and she's got like ice pack on her vagina. Okay.
Really.
So she's standing there, boots,
she's had
panties, ice pack on her vagina, smoking a cigarette. And she goes, Kara, that bitch bit my vagina lip. Kara. But my boots look pretty, don't they? My boots are so pretty.
So she was a lesbian.
No, she wasn't a lesbian.
So who bit her?
No, that bitch burnt my vagina lip. And that was her saying the bikini waxer.
Oh, okay. Bikini waxer.
She heated up that wax a little too hot.
I thought somebody was giving her cunnilingus and bit her lips.
No, yeah, no. Apparently, I mean, you get it waxed, and you know, sometimes some stuff can go wrong.
I would imagine that hurts a lot, you know.
I mean, she was holding an ice pack. She's like, that bitch bit my vagina lip.
Yeah.
But my boots look pretty, don't they? My boots are so pretty. She's so funny. She's really, really cute.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know that I could do that. You know, I mean, you have to lie there and spread your legs and everything.
Well, they don't do it for men.
Go into your ass. No, but for women, you know?
You know what? I've actually never gotten it done because it's quite, I mean, I should have gotten it done at one point. I will. But it's kind of pricey. Mm. So, but it's really great because, again, waxing does make hair grow back a little bit softer, thinner, and it's less maintenance. Like, you get it done. So, it hurts like hell, but then you don't have to do it for, like, 6 weeks.
Right.
Whereas, you know, but, yeah, I think that when I first heard about it, I laughed so hard because I was younger. I was like, you gotta be kidding me, man. People are like, hey, you just go spread your butt cheeks up, so if smack some stuff in, so, you know, like, I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. But I think if I were to go on another vacation or something, you know, like, I think I would just, because you don't have to, like, worry about taking care of it.
Why if you go to on vacation?
Well, if you're gonna
because
be like,
you're gonna wear a bikini or something.
Yeah, like you're constantly gonna be in like a bikini, and you don't really want to, you know, keep maintaining it. It's kind of like.
I see. Okay, so that's why you do it. Not if you met a new guy or something.
Or that too, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I personally just like it. I just like it. I mean, if we're gonna go there.
Yeah, we are gonna go
okay.
there.
Okay, I like it minimal.
Yeah.
But still something going on.
Yeah.
Because I think it looks like a woman.
And definitely, definitely.
But I don't like it. But I like it.
I'm not for fully shaved at all.
Yeah, but I like it very, very minimal. You know, but still, you know, kind of in its place and something's there. Like, hey, I'm a female and I've got, you know, I can do this if I wanted to.
No, I know, I know. But then it's you feel you're with a woman, not with a little girl. You know.
And I've talked to.
It seems like just so widespread now that everybody shaves. You know.
Or they just get it all. Everything's waxed off and they look like a baby down there.
Yeah. You see, you got to remember, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. You know, everybody was hairy then. You know. So, you know, I mean, I'm not looking for hairy like bushy, but at the same time, you know, I prefer a little bit down there, you know?
Okay, yeah, no, that's,
it's like a beard, you know?
My ex-boyfriend, I told you, when I was in a long relationship with, he was a very hairy guy, just hair everywhere on his whole body, and not my thing at all. But you know, you love the person, so you kind of deal with it. You kind of just push it out of the way. No, but but no, he was like, I was talking to him recently, and I was like, are you like, you know, shaving yet? Are you like waxing? And he's like, what? He's like, I'm a man. I'm like, no, you're like a caveman. You need to like, you need to scale back to be a man. And he's like, well, if big girls don't like it, they could go freaking date a toddler then. Go date a baby.
Yeah.
He's like, go date a baby. I'm not a baby.
Yeah. Ah. It's a little too extreme, huh?
No, it's funny. It's funny. But no, I definitely, I've talked to some guy friends and you know, I think one of the guys was like, you know, when it looks too manicured, it's like, what have you been doing? How many people have been seeing this? Yeah. Like, when it looks too, like, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, and it's almost like they're really good at it. He's like, it makes me not feel secure with it, you know?
Really?
Does that make sense? Like, it's on display, as opposed to, it's kind of, there's something natural going on there?
I don't know about it being on display. I mean, I like
that. If somebody's like, you know, if they're constantly either getting around or they're constantly, or if they're doing tons of photo shoots or if that's their line of business and it's always usually in a certain look, you know, you've seen the Playboy look, you know.
Right.
I think some guys feel like it's just not for them. It's for everybody.
Right.
And I've talked to some guys, and I know some guys, I have a really good friend of mine, and he's so funny. He's kind of gross, but he's not gross. It's just the way he is. But he kind of likes it all crazy. And he told me he likes it on a woman. There's like total
like bushy and stuff.
He likes it like, you know.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what I'm saying. It depends on like what turned you on when you were young, you know?
Well, I mean, when you're young, what do you mean?
Yeah, when you were a kid, you know? I mean, I remember like all the things that I saw when I was a kid and stuff. Granted, maybe I saw it too early, but I was always curious, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would get a hold of like slides, you know, and because they didn't have movies at the time, you know, but they had slides and magazines and things like that, you know. So if you look at porn from the 70s, they were all unshaved. They were all natural, you know. No fake boobs, no that, you know. So that's why, you know, my personal taste is natural, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but a little trimming there is fine, you know. But
do you manscape?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I just trim, you know. I never shave or anything. Just with scissors and stuff, you know. So it's not like a jungle down there.
You don't give your balls a buzz cut?
No, actually, I don't think I need that. Yeah.
They won't do looking at waxing online, and a lot of salons won't do men.
Really?
I don't know if it has to do with the skin or something, that they're not going to...
Yeah.
They won't do it. Yeah.
Maybe because it's women that do that.
I think it's more of a... Well, no, this is L.A., so a lot of men would, I think, be cool.
No, I mean the person that does the waxing is a woman. Maybe they don't want to put him in that situation.
I don't think it's that. I think it has something to do with the skin or something like that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit more of like a medical kind of liability or something like that.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know.
How do you put a man and a woman in a room, and he's like totally lying there naked with his legs spread and his ass cheeks spread?
Most...
You know, I mean, it's a very awkward situation.
It's awkward, but there's a lot of gay men that I think would have no problem with it. And maybe some straight guys, because, I mean, a lot of straight guys are almost gay out here anyway. Yeah. So they're getting their damn eyebrows waxed. And I think, look, I'm not for the unibrow. I don't think that that's good.
Right.
You know, and I do believe in, like, trimming things up and, like, hair should be in, like, you know, its rightful place.
Right.
You don't want to, like, just traveling all over your face and shit. But... You know, you're seeing these well manicured eyebrows with a really high arch and a lot of definition, and I'm just like, not sexy.
Yeah, that's too much, huh?
Yeah, so I don't think that there. I think there would be men that would be totally, down with it.
Oh yeah, I think the men would be down with it. I don't know how about the women that do the waxing, you know?
They're professional. I mean, they look at that stuff all day long. I don't think that they would. I think they just look at it as, like, they're professional. It's just like a gynecologist. It's like, I don't think they're getting turned on by...
No, but that's different.
Yeah,
you know, gynecologist is different. They
really?
Look, yeah, because they look inside, you know? That's not very sexy.
What?
Inside.
I mean...
It's not as sexy as outside of the vagina.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, they're going way up in there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's too medical.
It's too medical.
Yeah. But I still have to wonder, you know, who decides to go and become a gynecologist?
I don't know. That's a good question, because I don't understand when somebody's like, I just want to study vaginas.
Mm-hmm.
I want to study the ovulas and the uteruses and the fallopian tubes.
Yeah. I mean, they got to be some kind of pervert.
I don't think
it's
that.
Wanting to see a lot of vagina.
I don't relate, but I think it comes from babies.
I think it starts from there, though.
Isn't it babies? They usually want to deliver babies, and then they have to become gynecologists?
I suppose, but... Yeah.
Like your doctor is a gynecologist and they deliver babies.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. You know, it's like, you're going to get some hot patients and shit, but for the most part, you're going to get older, smelly women and, you know.
No, every woman goes. Every woman
that's
has
what I
to
mean.
Go.
That's
it's
what
not...
I mean. So, you know, a gynecologist is not all it's cracked up to be, you know, if you're there to look at vaginas.
Well, and it's an interesting, it's an interesting area. It's like... It's made, you know, for a certain type of action and activity, and anything outside of that activity, you're not going to have the stimulus along with it to enjoy it. It's just going to be like, okay.
Right.
Yeah. I've always said that. Like, genitalia to me is beautiful in the act, but outside of the act, you don't want to sit around and look at it.
Speak for yourself.
I did. But that's why you see, like, naked pictures of people, and it's usually they don't show the genitalia as much. Like, and people put, I'm talking about beautiful pictures, and they'll put those pictures on the wall or statues, and they don't really show the inner workings or even much, if any, of the genitalia, because it's just a little bit more for function, and it's sensual and sexy in the act, but outside of the act, it's just something about the look. It's not as aesthetic.
Mm.
Whereas, like, you know.
Just because you're not used to it, that's all. You know?
I have one. I'm used to it.
No, but looking at pictures, you know.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
You know, yeah.
I don't. Do you still look at that stuff?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Why not?
Your wife doesn't care?
No.
Does she know?
I'm sure.
You're sure?
We don't talk about it,
well,
but everybody looks at porn. What are you talking about?
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's common, but I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been part of my life. I mean, since I was a kid, I always was into, like,
do you feel like
stuff.
It's affected your relationship with your wife at all?
No.
That's because you don't.
I don't sit there. I mean, not all the time.
It's not like you look at it every day?
No, not at all. Yeah.
Well, I guess they say, because the number one statistics that they say that is the biggest effect from partners looking at pornography is that they devalue their sexual partner that they're with is the number one casualty of pornography.
Yeah.
So that's something that I was like, well, I mean, I understand men are men and women are women and whatever, but I can't be with a man that's not that he's ever seen it, but that it's something part of his life. I can't.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing. It's not part of my life. You know, it's not something that I do and masturbate to and stuff like that. Sometimes I just like enjoy watching it, you know, it kind of turns you on and stuff. But not as a replacement, no.
Yeah, I mean, like, but if you had to choose between that or, like, your wife.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that important to me.
Yeah. But you don't need it to...
It used to be. I mean, when I was single and stuff, I mean, I was watching all the time, you know? Yeah.
Because it's an interesting area. I mean, I think that we live in a culture where it's so considered normal and it's so accessible.
Right.
And they're trying to make it kind of cool. Like, oh, my porn stash. Like, you're like this shock jock kind of like, I've got
Who gets paid to get fucked on camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. And I understand, like, sex is sexy, but, I mean, the side effect to those things. It's interesting because when you do get into a relationship and you seem like somebody that's prefers the real deal and not the, you know, right. something on tape, is really being able to transition healthily into a sexual relationship with somebody and value them for them and their flaws and their imperfections and their strengths and weaknesses, and not hold them to some kind of standard that's not even real or true.
Yeah. I don't know if that happens a lot. You know,
oh, yeah, it does. I know a lot of people that are struggling with it.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. It's because I think what pornography can do is isolate people from real connection. Mm. And it becomes all about self-gratification.
Right.
You know, and it makes, there's something about sex that, and I think is the way it's been designed, is that it makes men, it can make men feel more like men mm-hmm. and women feel more like women. However, the only downfall, if it's not in check in its rightful place, is that if a man has to go to sex to feel like a man to get his identity, mm-hmm. then that's misusing sex.
Right.
The same thing as a woman. If she doesn't feel like a woman apart from sex, then
right.
there's a misuse of sex. So what happens is that can turn into sexual addiction, and it can turn into, with pornography, you know, you have a woman on your computer screen or whatever you're watching, and she's giving you a certain face, and she's looking at you with such desire and right. and like, ooh, I love it all, and it's all put on and staged. But a man feels such a rush of feeling like he's the man and mm-hmm. so desired, and it can be kind of like tunnel vision and addictive, but it's not a real world.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they don't know how to transition outside of that to, you know, that's one of the things that can happen.
Yeah, well, you know, that's when you go into abuse of something, you know. But I think, you know, a moderate amount of anything is healthy, you know. And people just like to be turned on. They like to see what other people do, you know.
Yeah, I understand why.
I mean, you know, what turns me on is like amateurs and stuff. Like to see like real people, you know, not all that fake boobs and the acting and stuff. When you watch amateurs, it's real, you know. They don't really stage anything. So
I understand the curiosity.
It's a big turn on.
I totally understand the curiosity. Mm. But I mean, like, wouldn't it be great? And I'm not putting this on you. I'm just saying, like, in general, for people that are going to it for stimulus, why not go to your partner for all of that stimulus?
What if you don't have one?
Well, that's different, but I'm talking more like people that are already in a relationship.
Then that probably means that the relationship is not good and they need to read Romance Rehab.
Yeah. I just think that as humans, it all kind of goes back to the microwave generation mentality, instant gratification. It's like anything that involves work, mm-hmm. we're going to look for other alternatives to achieve what we want, when we want it, how we want it. And
right.
I think that there's an instant in-your-face stimulus by, oh, I want to see it this way and that way and this way and this way and get turned on, versus really having to find that mystique and that census and sense memory
right.
with a partner, because it takes a little more work.
And what about couples that watch pornography together? What do you think about that?
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, I think pornography is poison.
Mm.
I don't think it's good in any way.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm not judging people that do it, because I understand mm-hmm. like the curiosity, and I understand we're humans and we're sexual and we want to feel certain feelings and stuff, but I don't think that it serves people. I think it's traps people. Even when people think it's in moderation, it's still robbing something from you that you could be getting in other ways from your partner. And you know, I'm not going to say, well, they're consenting adults. That's fine. You know, it's their choice and I respect their choice, but I do think that they're not getting the fullness from their own sex life and their own intimacy and their own discovery of one another if they're having to go to this. And to me, it's a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it can kind of, you know, really stunt that growth and that really stunt the exploration process.
Mm-hmm.
And people are they're being robbed,
mm-hmm.
really. And they don't see it like that because, oh, part of it's fun and part of it's exciting and whatever, but the longer effect of it is that, you know, it's still I just think that sex is made to be done and made mm-hmm. to be engaged. It's mm-hmm. not made to be watched.
Mm.
It's not about a third party being involved.
Right.
It's about two people becoming one flesh.
Yeah.
Intimately, emotionally, spiritually, and physically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at the way men and women are built, it's like, you know, women have this vagina and that's like a completely open, well, it's not open until it's been opened, but it's like there's a piece that fits there,
mm-hmm.
and men have that piece and they literally become one flesh,
mm-hmm.
and then they can, you know, it's just a beautiful, sensual, erotic, passionate act that is so good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think when you're...
So in your mind, you can't separate love and sex, right? I mean, to you...
No, I
like
mean, you can,
thing?
But I don't think it's good. I think you can condition yourself to do a lot of things. I mean, people have the ability to compartmentalize, but I think that it's unhealthy.
See, that's what I think. I think you're putting everything in a box, though, you know? And
who?
You.
How am I putting in a box?
Well, you're saying, you know, this is for this. This is how it's meant to be. This is how this, you know? And you sort of developed like a whole reality for yourself that I don't think really reflects what most people feel.
Oh, I know. You know? Well, you need to understand something. I know what I'm saying is not popular.
Right.
And I know that it could probably even offend people.
Right.
But the reality is that I believe there is, I don't want to say a box, but there are boundaries to sex and a context for it to be the most healthy and the most satisfying. Mm-hmm. Now, I think when you step outside those boundaries, you're going to experience a lot of different things. And some of those things may be in some ways more exciting, but in the long run, not as healthy for you.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't even the voice of Kara speaking as much as it is study and research and a lot of people that have done and written a lot of books about it, that, you know, pornography leads to a lot of destructive things, even just within a person. And again, one of the
I can quote studies for you from psychologists and psychiatrists and so forth, you know, marriage therapists that will tell you that, you know, watching porn together is healthy for a relationship, you know? It'll spark your sex life and these things, you
that's
know?
That's just like a temporary band-aid on a bigger problem.
Okay. You see, I'll tell you what I think the issue is. The issue is that you've not been married yet for a long time. And I think once you are, you'll start seeing things differently. Because right now, you're being idealistic about things the way things are.
I am being idealistic.
You know, that's what I'm saying, though.
Well, I think there's nothing wrong with wanting a certain ideal. It doesn't mean that you're always going to have it, but there's nothing wrong.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. All I'm saying is it's not rooted in reality, though.
Well,
you know, in other words,
Sam,
you're constantly saying it should be, it should be, it should be.
I'm saying this is what I believe, and this is my opinion, and this is what I'm striving for in my life. And, you know, I'm not perfect. This isn't about a holier than thou thing. This is just about, I think this is the most healthy context. Mm-hmm. That, again, when you live it and you breathe it and you actually get there, I don't think it's going to come easy.
Right.
I'm not naive to think that I'm just going to fall in love and we're going to have sex all the time and it's going to be like a really deep well of ocean and I'm going to be a dolphin.
So you don't think it's going to be like that?
No, I know it's going to be, there's going to be work involved, but I'm okay with, you know, taking the work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, people can avoid the work and look for quick fixes, and you can do that too.
Right.
I mean, I definitely see that, you know, having work involved. I mean, most things that are worth stuff, you do work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we live in a society that I don't believe in pop psychology. I don't really believe in the whole, you know, have what you want when you want it. It's you're entitled to it. You know, do this, just fix it this way. And you pay a price for everything. If you want to do it that way, you can have a certain immediate gratification and it can feel great and you can get away with that for a while. But then ask yourself, and I'm not even giving the answers because I don't fully know, but I'm saying ask yourself, what are the consequences or side effects to choosing it that way? The same thing with, okay, well, I've got this quote unquote ideal vision of what I think a sex and marriage should look like, right? Well, what is that going to cost me? Well, when I get married, it's probably going to be easy at first, and then it's going to get harder, and I'm going to be tempted to want to do different things that are outside, quote unquote, of my ideal. And I'm going to have to work on discovering that person in a deeper way and self-sacrificing and hoping that we're going to serve each other and we're going to grow in this way. I just think there's work involved either way and there's sacrifice involved, but it's kind of like long-term effects, what do you hope to gain?
Right.
And that's really the way I see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fine. I just can't understand the restrictions you put on yourself, you know, but I think if it helps you feel better about yourself, then that's what you do, you know?
I don't know about feeling better about myself. I just think that I really believe.
I mean, are these like opinions that you've always had? Do you think
they've developed?
Got this,
I mean,
at home and stuff?
No, I mean, they've developed over time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've had sex. I've been in a long relationship of 5 years. And I mean, I definitely, they've just kind of cultivated over time.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, that's where I believe. And I think it is really good.
Yeah.
I really do.
But well, I mean, if it works for you, I mean, that's all I'm saying. You know, if it works for you, then it's good, you know?
Yeah.
And if it helps you be happy, then it's a good thing, you know?
Well, we'll
I'm
see.
Not here to judge or anything. I'm just, like,
no,
wondering,
you
know?
I'm not offended. I mean, you're
curious.
Saying you don't relate, and you don't relate, and that's okay. You're
yeah.
saying, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't really get why you're doing this. And that is okay. It's okay to say, that's not been my life. That's not been my experiences. And I really don't see why. And that is okay for somebody to go, hey, I don't get it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But I'm only just trying to bridge the gap of saying, well, this is kind of where I'm coming from. And this is what I see in the long term. I mean, I'm not going to go down all my sexual history. Not that there's a lot, but, you know, I'm not going to overly expose my personal life, but I will say that, you know, I've experienced, I feel like, a little bit of what's out there, you know, and it's enough for me personally to go, I have enjoyed this, but it's not what I want long-term.
Right.
And this isn't what I want in a marriage.
Right.
And so when that time does come, I'm willing to put the work in that I think needs to go in to receive a certain kind of to reap the benefits because I don't want X, Y, and Z. And I've learned from other people's marriages, other people I know that I've seen things where, you know, there has been pornography or there has been, you know, other things brought into it because they're, you know, they're getting in the rut or they, you know, and I've seen different consequences to it that the media and pop psychology isn't going to tell you, which is, isolation, lack of connection, devaluing your sexual partner. I mean, these are real things. I mean, so... You know, I definitely see it that way, too. So,
okay.
But, when the rubber meets the road, I'll let you know how it goes.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
I'll no be like, pun intended. the rubber.
I'm not using that when I'm married.
No, why would you?
Hell no.
No, that sucks.
I wouldn't do that. I have friends that have used that even when they were married because they didn't want to get pregnant or whatever. Mm. And I'm like, there's some other alternatives.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't want to use it.
Yeah. So, but you do believe in contraception?
I do.
You do? Okay. Isn't that against God and religion?
I don't really know. I mean, that's a real in-house debate. There's a lot of Christians of different sects and different beliefs that believe it is not in part of God's will. I don't really know. Maybe that's a personal thing between you and God. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't use birth control. I've never used birth control. And I've read a lot on birth control and personal people's stories that, you know, it can, and the key word is can, create a hostile living environment in your body. Mm. And I don't even really want to risk it. And not that I'm against it, but I kind of don't see the benefit when there's other alternatives. Another way that I'm learning about, because I have friends that are starting to implement it, is using basically a chart of when you ovulate, because there's actually only 3 days of your cycle, days within a woman's cycle that she can get pregnant.
Right.
Only 3 days.
Right.
And those 3 days, you can chart it and you can find it, and a lot of it has to do with your body temperature, and it has to do with once you've ovulated in that time frame. So, you know, I think it's manageable in other ways, but I'm not an expert, so don't take my word on it. Like, go look it up and read it. But that's, you know, that's something that I think that if you're wanting to, you know, not use some kind of foreign substance in your body, condoms just aren't fun. You know?
Yeah. But you don't get, I mean, you don't believe in getting pregnant all the time. Like, without contraception, right?
No, I mean, I think that, first of all, I'm not married and I'm not having sex.
No,
so,
I mean when you're married.
Yeah, but even when I'm married, like, I don't know, I'm really divided on it because I think that partly it would be totally great to just let nature take its course, throw you down on the kitchen table, give it to your woman.
Yeah.
And if a baby comes
and
out of it...
And have a baby every fucking time.
Yeah, like, if we were, like, back in a different time, you know, that'd be kind of cool. But I think that there's something...
It doesn't have to be a different time, by the way. I want to announce that next week we're going to talk to a woman that's the 23rd child out of a 46-child family.
No way. That doesn't exist. Are you serious?
Polygamists in Utah.
Is she still involved?
No, I don't think so, because she wrote a book now. So
same guy, but multiple
exactly,
women. Okay.
Exactly, but that also shows you there's no contraception involved here. I mean, these guys are like, would procreate like there's no tomorrow, you know. That's a lot of kids.
That just
so,
made my
yeah,
skin
but,
crawl.
But
that made my
but
skin
that's
crawl,
what I'm
Sam.
Telling you. I mean, some people don't use contraception, and then they end up with 6-7 kids. They can't afford it. And,
well,
you know,
I'm not.
And then
I'm
the
not,
government has to support it.
I mean, to be honest with you, I have to agree with you. I mean, personally, I don't know. I'm not the most fiscally responsible. I've you know, not to get on a high horse here, but I do know people that just haven't been. You know, it's one thing when it happens and you need help. It's another thing to kind of plan out a pregnancy.
Right.
And knowing you can't afford it.
Right.
I don't understand that.
Mm.
Because then everyone else is paying to raise your child.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That's exactly true.
It's one
yeah.
thing if it just happened and you need help. I mean, that's different. But to premeditate it and then
yeah.
have to get on assistance, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know. But people do that. And, you know, apparently they don't believe in contraception, you know, and it's usually, I think, religious reasons.
Well, I know people that it's, I don't know, there's just some, it really goes back to, do you believe that the government's here to protect us or to take care of you? And there is a mentality where people think that the government is there to take care of them. So if
right.
they want to have a child, they
right.
should have financial support
right.
from the government to raise that child.
Yeah. But,
and I don't agree
know,
with that at all.
Yeah. No, well, you know, God would help them. What can I tell you? All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back right after this.
For the most entertaining talk anywhere, stay tuned to LA Talk Radio. Your real talk is your free 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Above and beyond, above and beyond. our shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
You should do opera. Do you sing opera?
I actually incorporate it into my music, just like bits and pieces of it.
Really?
It's fun, and it... Yeah, I mean, I do more of like a soul kind of neo soul folk rock kind of sound, whatever mm-hmm. that is, but and then I'll do pieces of like, you know, mm-hmm. all that stuff, you know.
Yeah. Did you do any vocal training at all?
Everybody asks that. You know, I've always sang in choirs, and I did musical theater, and I did have a little bit of one-on-one voice coaching mm-hmm. throughout some of the competitions and stuff that I did. But yeah, it's definitely I learned a lot of basics about voice, but I'm not like that world is so technical and it so goes far above and beyond where I've gone with my voice in that way.
Yeah.
It didn't inspire me, to be honest. I started studying voice. I went to 1 year of college and was a vocal performance major, mm-hmm. and I was so not motivated. I never did any of the work. I was like, why am I not into this? I love singing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it's such a technical world. And it was not about what moves the listener and moves the singer. It's about technicality.
Right.
And some of the passions in it, but it's not what moves me. And I was leaning more towards a pop sound and more towards folk and
right.
rock.
They do teach you how to breathe, though. And,
they teach you the good basics to where yeah. you can kind of use it and you can use it in all different types of singing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was more of like what I call quote-unquote musical Puritans. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a really good friend at the time, and she was just very like, opera, opera, opera. And I was like, well, what about this and what about that? And she's like, it was all totally different styles of music, and mm-hmm. there was just such a weird chasm because I wanted to do stuff that wasn't necessarily about sounding pretty, but it moved people.
Right.
And I started to get like, man, I really don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only years later that I picked up a guitar and started finding my voice.
Yeah. Do you do covers? And
yeah, I did. Yeah,
like who? Who do you like?
You want me to sing you a little bit?
Yeah.
Here we go. You're going to love this one, okay? Ready?
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it's good. Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? Mm-hmm. I got a bad desire. Ta, ta. Oh, 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 I'm on fire. Ta, 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 ta. Well, tell me now, baby, is he good to you? Will he do to you the things that I do? I can take you high. Ooh, I'm on fire. Do you know it?
Uh-huh.
Ooh. I love it. I love that song.
Isn't that the Bruce Springsteen
song?
It is.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Good old Bruce.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice rendition of the song.
It's cool. I use a lot of my voice, but the opera stuff, like what I do in it, because he has like a guitar. I don't know, synthesizer or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I use my voice like, ooh, 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 ooh,
mm-hmm. instead of the synthesizer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. So it's kind of cool to have the opera-ish thing and learn how to do it with vibrato, like, ah, you know, like mm-hmm. that, or like, ooh, you know, be able to do straight tones versus mm-hmm. vibrato and stuff like that.
Right.
Those are all very quick, crappy little demonstrations.
Yeah.
But Hear the real thing live next show.
Who are your favorite artists?
Some of my most favorite vocalists mm-hmm. would have to be Ava Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
She died a little while back, and she is just mainly did covers, but she was just this little white girl that just sounded like she was almost like Etta James, or just real soulful voice and beautiful. I'm also in love with you know, a lot of current artists, like I love Coldplay as far as their melodies go.
Mm-hmm.
I love KT Tunstall. Mm-hmm. You know that song? Well, I better hold him down, and I'm gonna let her do all the time. And I
sounds
said,
familiar.
Oh no, bum, bum. Oh no, no, no. Do you know that one?
No.
You're not the one for me. Oh, oh no, no, no. Okay.
No.
KT Tunstall. I love Rachel Yamagata. These are people.
So it's more like obscure people. I never heard of them.
Well, Katie Dunstall actually is a big pop artist, but
she is.
Yeah, but she's on different radio stations. I do like Lady Gaga. Have you heard of her?
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
of course.
Well, her
My daughter's crazy about her.
Well, she's so
she
cool.
Worships her.
Because, I mean, when I first heard her, I think everybody was like, what the hell is this? And is this a joke? But she's really a great vocalist,
really?
And she plays with her music, and it's obscure but accessible and funny,
mm-hmm.
and she's very funny, and she's so dramatic, and I love her. She has some fun tunes. But yeah, I mean, I kind of have like a really diverse musical, you know, palette for what I like. I love, I love rock. I love, soul. I love, you know, Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah.
I love a lot of songs by them because it's just such an ensemble. Like all the different instruments coming together create its own, this really just atmosphere and sound that I really, really like.
Yeah. Well, sounds pretty good. So it is diverse.
Yeah, it's really diverse. I've never been huge in a country, which is funny because I'm from Texas. So every time I go back and I play music, it's like, give us a country song. We want a country song. You can play right now for us, right now.
Yeah, stop your California music.
I know. They're over it. They're like, we're not into it. I've had one guy say, honey, I love your voice, but I hate your damn music. I was like, cool, thanks. See you next time. He's actually a friend of my brother's. He's like, you got a great voice, and I want to suck your lips off.
Oh, that sounds good.
But I hate your damn music.
I hate your damn music.
He did. He wanted to suck my lips off, because I guess when I was singing, he was overcome with my my voice and my lips.
Man, I'm telling you, men are so fucking crazy sometimes. With the
men are just
weird.
I don't know what it is. I really think some of it's sexual and some of it's just shock value.
They fixate on things, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, men fall in love with body parts.
I know, it's not good.
I mean, you have like foot fetish and things like
bullshit.
That, you know? And some men are like boob men and some of them are ass men.
I know, I've been in relationships or, you know, dates where I just feel like I like being attractive and sexy, but I definitely, if any time it has, if my attraction has nothing to do with who I am as a human,
right.
I'm not interested.
Uh-huh.
And I've been with guys that just are like just salivating over my, you know, my ample chest.
Your ample chest.
And, you know, I'm like, I start to lose any stimulus for myself with it. I'm like, oh, I'm not interested because...
Yeah. Now, what is the reason you feel comfortable going out with cleavage and stuff like that? Because you tend to do that, and you're comfortable with it.
I don't see why not to be comfortable with it. I mean,
right.
I mean, I know
because
when
it grabs attention. It's distracting.
Well, it's
to
not
people,
like I
even
mean,
to women. I think.
Well, you are so mean to me. You are so.
Oh no, I don't mean to be mean.
No, I know, but you're funny because you go back and forth with like, oh, it's great. You should feel comfortable. Then you're like, who do you think you are?
I did not say who do you think you are.
I'm playing. Listen.
Not even close.
Listen, this is what I'm saying to you.
I'm just asking what it gives you. You know, what is the thinking behind
it? For example, for me, it's like my cleavage, yet another topic on my cleavage. Another topic.
You brought it up.
I wasn't going there.
But your ample.
Listen. I'm just saying that I wear it naturally. It's not really like it's on display and it's hiked up and it's in a certain corset and everything's pushed out there. It's just naturally like, this is the cut of the dress. These are my boobs. This is where it
falls.
Yeah,
but you chose the cut of the dress. That's
I
what
chose
I mean.
The dress, and this is the way the cut is.
Yeah.
I didn't choose
You're
it.
Just proud of your breasts, and you want to show them off. That's
See,
it.
I don't feel that way,
no?
to be honest.
Really?
I really don't feel that way. I know maybe it looks that way, and I have to be consciously aware of it. And if that's the way it looks, then I need to be aware that that's what people think.
Well, I'm telling you, it projects sexuality. That's what it does.
Well, I don't feel like I need to hide my sexuality.
No, you don't. But it's sort of like goes against the things that you say sometimes.
So really? So yeah. Everything about me, I'm just...
No, I mean, I'm not... Look, people are complicated, okay?
They are complicated.
Yeah.
I feel like... I mean, you're asking how I feel about it versus how it looks. Just to isolate the first part, how I feel about it is I feel beautiful. I put it on not to get something, but because I feel this way.
Mm.
And maybe that's selfish, and maybe I'm being too detached from the way it gives off, you know? I mean, if I go into a job interview, I don't have this kind of... I mean, like, I'm wearing...
Right.
I'm
so
wearing,
you are aware of the effect.
To an extent, yeah. I mean, maybe not to the... I don't think maybe I'm aware enough. Maybe that's the problem. I mean, right. I know that it's attractive. I know that guys are interested in breasts. Some
it's
guys
more
aren't.
Than just attractive. I mean, you just, like, want to grab them, you know? And bury your head between them, you know? It's like
there's just no way I'm going to come out looking good in this conversation.
No, it's okay.
I just feel like I look pretty, and then I look so pretty. And I feel like, well, I feel like
you
I look,
do, but
and
you
I feel
just
like I look like a woman. I feel like I don't look like I don't look like hookerish or anything. I feel like I'm just look like a voluptuous woman. That's the way I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like I just look like a curvy, voluptuous woman that's wearing a dress, and this is how it falls on my body. Yeah. And that's how I feel. But, you know, you're telling me you're clearly painting
yeah,
it out.
You project, yeah, you, it projects something else, I think.
Okay.
But just by people's comments, by the way they check you out and stuff, you know? I mean,
whose comments?
Like here, people come in and out, you know? I mean,
have they said
to you? Yeah, like TJ said a few things to you, right?
Well, I mean, TJ's also like a little bit of that, like, yeah, I'm from New York. I'm, you know, it's like, yeah, we're going to talk about my
politics.
Yeah,
but he's very honest. I mean,
but he's also kind of looking for anything and everything to shock people on the radio because he's a shock jack a little
bit.
No,
but not on the radio, okay? Not on the radio.
I see through TJ. He's cool. I like TJ, but I also see where he's coming from. It's kind of like fun and playful. I don't really think that he's... I don't really take it like he's having such a struggle.
Right.
I think he's just being funny. He's a comedian.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm here to say that if you think any man is not looking at it or distracted by it...
I'll cover it up.
That if you think so, then... No, don't cover it up. I mean, I can barely see it because you got your computer anyway in front of you. But no, that's just the thing is that if you think men do not notice or absolutely go crazy over it, then I have something new for you to let you know.
Okay, can I take it to this place then?
Yes.
Living in the Valley, even though it's so close to Hollywood,
is
still like a different world.
Right.
And... me wearing a sundress, because this is just a sundress, with some cleavage, doesn't really, it blends in. I'm not walking into a studio in Sherman Oaks where it's more residential and there's families and people are like, yeah. Oh my gosh, boobies. It's just not the same thing. Yeah. Like if I were to go back home to Texas and maybe be in a certain environment, I want to respect people, especially like, okay, for example, I have a bunch of friends that are family people with kids, and I've really, really made efforts to scale back my clothing, and I'm not even wearing anything inappropriate, it's just the cleavage factor.
Exactly.
So I've learned to really, I don't want to violate them, I don't want them to feel uncomfortable, so I've worked on, you know, wearing stuff that covers it up and doesn't distract, because I really don't want... to offend anybody, especially in their own home.
I don't think it's about offending, though. Because
well, you even said it. It's like it can get an attention from people that they may not want to get.
Distracting, maybe.
Distracting,
exactly. Okay.
So my point is I don't do it in those environments. I don't do it in job interviews. But walking down the street in Hollywood wearing a sundress with a little cleavage to me is like, come on. Yeah. It's really not standing out.
I see.
It's not really standing out.
Right.
You know? I don't think so.
That's what you think.
But it's Hollywood. I mean, this is Sherman Oaks. It's like... guys are basically, you
listen,
know.
A blonde pretty woman walks by and then she has a cleavage and
she has
that's
a cleavage.
Like yeah you know men notice that
I've seen
women notice that too
seen all of the pictures of the girls on your wall in your studio where you guys have your hand all over their arm and I mean your arm around them and you're like cheese for the camera and those girls are like scantily clad. They're very, very, very dressed like, a lot of them are dressed like porn stars. I'm sure they are.
Right.
And I'm sure that's true, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, that kind of attire versus me wearing a sundress with some cleavage.
Right.
Really.
Right. But you have to understand something. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just telling you how people perceive it. That's all.
Hey, I'm just giving it back. I'm just letting you know. I'm just trying to level with you, Sam.
Okay, awesome.
Trying to level with you.
Awesome. Listen, I got to finish a few minutes early because we've got some visitors coming here. So, you good for today?
I'm good.
All talked out and everything?
Uh-huh.
I know. Are you going to take a hike or something?
Oh, man, I'm going to do it. It's too beautiful.
Yeah, it is really
so
nice
beautiful.
Outside.
I'm going to just be in the sun. I've got some job stuff I got to do, but other than that, things are good.
Sounds good.
You too.
Okay, everyone, we'll see you here tomorrow.
Thank you.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the Palatial Studios of